Kim, we talked a while back about me setting up some kind of planting for my bees, something I could do that's direct and straightforward. I followed your advice and I've made some decisions. So I'd like to continue talking about that. If you're in the mood for it, tell me what to do to get ready for the site preparation.
Well, I can do that. So you sat on your deck and you sat in your living room and you know where you want the flowers and now you're ready to start getting ready. All right. I can help you with
that. I want to talk. Hi, I'm Jim Two.
And I'm Kim Flottam.
And we're at Honeybee Obscura, where today we want to talk about how to put flowers in so I can enjoy them as much as my bees.
You are listening to Honeybee Obscura, brought to you by Growing Planet Media, the folks behind Beekeeping Today podcast. Each week on Honeybee Obscura, hosts Kim Flottam and Jim Two explore the complexities, the beauty, the fun, and the challenges of managing honeybees in today's world in an engaging and informative discussion meant for all beekeepers, long-timers, and those just starting their journey with bees. So sit back and enjoy the next several minutes as Kim and Jim explore all things honeybees.
Let me ask right up front, after I have followed your advice, and as you said, I chose a spot and I've actually talked to my new neighbors, and they seem to be okay with it. You know, it's just putting in some flowers. I've got a spot picked out. What do I do now?
Well, the first thing you want to do, well, there's several things you want to do before you do anything else. Before you do any work, there's some things you need to do.
Good.
The first one is, do you have enough light? Are there trees? You're looking at it in the winter. In the summer, are the trees that are nearby going to cause some lots or no shade? You got to figure that one out.
All right.
And the other one is, can you get water there?
All right.
Because at some point in time, it's not going to rain enough, and you're going to have to get some water out there.
Yeah.
Can you do it easily? Is there a hose that you can run out there? Lawn sprinkler, that sort of thing? Or are you going to have to carry it? So those are the things that's before you do anything at all.
Well, let me answer those. Just for the sake of me talking to you with others eavesdropping on us, yes, I do have good sunlight almost all day on this plot. And with a water hose, I can make it. It's going to have to string two hoses together, but I can get water to it. So I have light, and I have water if I need to supplement it from my well.
Okay, well, then it gets busy. Basically, what you're going to, there's two ways to do this. There's the easy way and there's the good way. And of course, the good way is going to be more work. But the easy way, of course, is get out your rototiller, borrow a rototiller, rent one, whatever it is you have to do. Chew up the piece of ground, the grass, the weeds, the stones, everything that's in there. Chew it up. Put your plants in. Or put your seeds in, put mulch on, and you're done. You can do it before lunch. That's the easy way. There's a better way, and it's going to take you longer, and it's going to be more work. But it'll last longer. You'll enjoy it more, and you'll have more flowers, and you'll have more pollinators and bees and butterflies than if you do it the easy way. You want to get started?
Yeah. I guess I want to know exactly how much harder is the better way.
Well, if you do this for a living, or if you've done this a lot before, you kind of got a feel for it, but you really got to get rid of that sod, that grass that's there. And I'll tell you why. It's because that sod is holding in some stones. It's got a lot of seeds in it, weed seeds in it. It's got a lot of grass seed in it. It's got a lot of roots in it that are going to make digging it up tough. That's when you go to rototill this and you're rototilling sod, you're going to bounce for a while until you get that chewed up. So you got to get rid of that, and that's not impossible, but it's work, and it's putting a shovel down, take a spade, a flat bladed spade, and go around the outside of it, and start around the periphery, and then just put it down about until you're past the roots of the grass. It's probably about 5 to 6 inches before you get down to no roots left.
Okay, I got a couple of questions right off the bat. Number one, as a much younger man, a long time ago, I rented and used a sod cutter. when I was doing something in my lawn, now long forgotten. And this vibrating knife, not totally unlike an uncapping knife for the honey frame, cut that sod base, and then I rolled those big sod rolls up, which were stunningly heavy, and just rolled the sod off of this while I was putting in a patio. Is that something that I would consider, going to a rental place, renting a sod cutter, using that thing, rolling the sod up, getting the sod rolls out of the way? Would I consider that, or is that over the top?
In a heartbeat. If you've got, and it kind of depends on, are you moving acres, or are you moving, you know, a few square feet?
10 by 10 was what I was going to start with, something I thought I could manage.
Okay.
My wife would be saying a foot by a foot, but I thought 10 feet by 10 feet would be enough.
10 feet by 10 feet. A couple of things that I'll mention right off the bat is, do you want this to be 10 feet by 10 feet, or do you want this to be 3 feet by 20 feet? You know, so you can get to either side of it. If you got plants in the middle of a 10 by 10, it's going to be harder to get to them.
What a great point. What a great point. If I made it long and narrow,
yeah,
then you can reach over your own planting.
Exactly.
And if I make it 10 by 10, then I got to walk on my plants to get out there in the middle to get the grass out that's invading or whatever.
So, you know, think that one over.
Well, that adds confusion, Kim. That's not, I'm trying to make my mind up, and you're shooting holes in what I've already decided. Because what I wanted to ask before I get away from this sod cutter, am I not digging a hole? Wouldn't I have for the sake of discussion, a 10 by 10 hole that's 6 inches deep?
Yeah, you're going
to
have.
Do I have to fill that in with something then?
No, well, you're going to. But you're going to put mulch and you know, that kind of material on it anyway. You know, if you chewed up the sod with a rototiller, you're going to have to mulch it so to keep the weeds down and to add organic matter to it. So you're going to put stuff in there anyway. The other thing is that when you remove that sod, whether you use a shovel or you use a sod remover, is you want to get as much of that dirt off that stuff as you can and put it back in the hole. Not weeds, not seeds, just as much of the dirt as you can and put it back in there. And then once you get that bin, that'll fill it up about close to half, maybe more than half of the hole that you dug. Then you get your rototiller in there and you chew it up. And you want to go down another, you know, rototiller depth. So it's nice and loose. So when the roots for those plants start reaching for water, they don't have to work very hard at it. And it's not going to be... you're south of me here in Ohio. I have lake bed clay.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, once it gets dry, it's bulletproof. You know, you can't get a shovel into it because it's so hard. So what you want to do is you want to be able to make it so your plants don't have to put up that fight. You want them nice and airy and spread out and not solid clay.
Better Bee is pleased to sponsor today's episode of Honey Bee Obscura podcast. For over 40 years, Better Bee has supplied beekeepers across the country with the tools, equipment, and knowledge needed to succeed. Because many Better Bee employees are beekeepers themselves, they understand your needs and challenges and are better prepared to answer your beekeeping questions. From their colorful catalog to their support of beekeeper educational activities, including this podcast, Better Bee truly lives up to their tagline of beekeepers serving beekeepers. See for yourself at betterbee.com.
Once you get that done, you get your rototilling done, and then you get you put some mulch in, and you rototill it some more, and some compost, and you rototill it some more. And one thing to do is to keep that sod that you dug up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get it someplace, because after a while, you can use that for the compost that you're going to put in the next planting. That grass will die, and the roots will die, and the weed seeds will sprout and be dead. And you can then take that and put it in another hole to use for compost. So nothing's going to waste here.
Well, while I'm doing all this, am I supposed to be fertilizing, or do you fertilize for wildflowers?
Well, you know, it's sort of like, how natural do you want to be? And if you're doing bees and you want to be a natural beekeeper, you're not going to do anything. But if you want your bees to be alive next spring, there's some things you're going to do to help them help themselves. And for your garden, it's the same thing. If you don't do good soil preparation, if you don't add the nutrients that are lacking in that soil, you're going to have problems with those plants. So take a soil test.
Okay.
And easy to do. You take a shovelful, maybe in a handful. Two or three handfuls of dirt from the extremes, both ends in the middle of that plot that you dug up. Take it down to your county extension office. And they will manage to have the soil tested. Probably your local county soil and water people will do it for you. Find out, you know, call either or both and find out who does soil tests. Yep. It's going to take a while, but it's worth every penny that it's going to cost you, because then you know exactly what you're. So once you find out, okay, you're low in nitrogen, you're low in phosphorus, but you got lots and lots of potassium. Your organic matter is almost non-existent, so you know you're going to have to add a lot of that. You've got lots of, the soil test will tell you everything you need, but the one thing you're going to have to do is tell the soil test people what you're going to plant there. Because if you're planting alfalfa for cattle, you're going to need different nutrients than if you're planting flowers for bees. So tell them what you're going to plant there, and then they'll tell you everything you need. Then you go to your local garden center or wherever it is you're going to get the nutrients, NPK, and all of the rest, the micronutrients that you're going to need. You apply them uniformly. You till them in, and you sit back and wait for a little bit and let them kind of get used to each other. And well, here's the question. What are you going to plant there?
In my defense of just doing this for color, for bees, for the enjoyment, not so much for a honey crop, I just wanted an eclectic mix of wildflowers that will flower pretty much throughout the summer. And that I was prepared to reseed some every year. I would assume that some of the more aggressive varieties and species would overrun the planting after a few years, so I was going to reseed some every year. So I don't have a specific list of names for you. I was just going to get a general Ohio wildflower mix for my area here.
Well, there's let me just point you in some directions so that maybe give you some ideas. Xerxes Society has a list of all of the plants that are going to grow in the Great Lakes region. That's you and me.
Yep.
So you can take a look at their list. And their list isn't going to have any invasives. It's not going to have any toxic. It's going to have good stuff.
Why don't you stop and spell that? Because that's really a good resource. And as they have this listing for all areas of the U.S.
Yep. Just go onto the web and do a search for Xerxes, Xerces.
Because I had a look at that, and it's a powerhouse of information.
Yes, it is. But there's other places. The U.S. Forest Service has got lists, and the Pollinator Partnership people, that's all they do, is they look at getting bee plants into places that don't have bee plants now. And there are all these places are looking at. They're all natives. They're all going to be adapted to the area where you live. Your Ohio State Extension. Okay. Office downtown. They're going to have lists for it. The USDA NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Forest Service, all of these people, depending on what you're going to plant there, have lists. And if you're going to go for trees, you might go one way. If you're going to go for an orchard, you go another way. So, you know, you get all these resources. And they've already done this work for you. So you get a There's a plant that there's a scene that you want to look at, and you want it to be this color, and you want it to be this tall, and you want it to last this long. Somebody somewhere's got that list.
Right now, Kim, I have a backyard. I have written in Bee Culture and other magazines about my backyard. You just mow it, you know. So when the clover comes in, I cut it down because it's supposed to be neat and clean. And I'm trying to make a change. I'm trying to add more diversity and not just be such a desert back there of pollen and nectar resources. So I have not lost sight of my beekeeping. I have not lost sight of my passion for beekeeping. I just want to kind of wander off to one side and put some flowers out there so I can watch the bees forage, collect nectar. And while you were talking, I was thinking on that 10 by 10 plot, why wouldn't I leave an aisle out to the middle of it, and then put a bird waterer there or some kind of watering device So right in the middle of my planting is also a water supply for my bees. Then I'd just leave a little pathway to it. You know, it'd be pebbles and stones. It'd be so nice looking in my mind, Kim. In reality, it's going to be weeds and grass and rodents and Japanese beetles everywhere. But in my mind, it's a beautiful place right now.
Well, let's just keep it beautiful for now. And yes, you can put a path in of something. You could use planks and, you know, whatever is going to keep the weeds down, and put a bird bath in the middle, some kind of watering device, something. All of that works.
Well, I know by now, there's people that are yawning and their eyes are glazed over. I thought we were going to be listening to these two talk about bees, and all they've done was talk about plowing up their backyard. But I want to be emphatic. It really is. It's part and parcel. The bees really want something to forage on. And if I put those pretty flowers there, and it brightens the neighborhood, it brightens my attitude, it makes the bees feel good about their existence. It adds to the diversity of my beekeeping. It's a good thing.
Well, I tell you what, we're running short of time here.
Yep.
But what I want to talk to you later about is taking a look at these lists and kind of trying to decide what it is you want to plant.
Yep. And what we need to do too, Kim, is that we mentioned Ohio, we mentioned Ohio State, but anywhere. Name anywhere in the country. These resources are there, and those plant lists are there. So don't tune us out just because we're not mentioning your area. You have the same possibility we have. And in the next episode, Kim, I want to discuss, what do you do if you don't have water and you really have trouble getting buckets to haul it? Because some parts of the country are really dry right now. And that water thing may be a bigger issue for some than we're realizing.
Good point.
Today, I think we're out of time.
I think we are.
Thanks for putting up with me on this. We've talked about this subject before, and the main thing I have to do is get out of this chair and go do something. Do something, even if it's just in pots. So I will do something next spring, I promise. But let's talk about it more.
Okay, thanks.
Had a good time. Thanks for listening, everyone.